Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Hey there, good morning, everybody. Welcome into a Wednesday edition of Sports Daily, counting down the days now until the Super Bowl. We are almost there as the Chiefs go and try to make a little history this weekend against Philadelphia. We're going to talk all about it more today. Don't you worry, Chiefs fans. We'll have you covered. Also, a big night of college hoops. We had wins for both Wichita State and K-State. So we'll get into each one of those games today on the program. We'll talk a little KU hoops as well with our KU insider, Sri Islata, who's stopping by a little bit later to chat it up with us. All kinds of fun stuff. Your chance to win some March Madness prize, your chance to win some HTO coming as well today. It'll be a big show. Thanks for listening to us on KFH. Thanks for watching us on 12 News Connected, on Facebook, on YouTube, on X. Thanks for listening to us on the Odyssey app. You can get in touch with us in all of those capacities. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
Man, I'm hanging in there. Good to see you this morning. It was a long night. Our dog woke me up at like 1 o'clock in the morning to go outside, which usually isn't that big of a deal, but then I couldn't go back to sleep, and so I'm running on a lot of caffeine today, so it should be an interesting show.
Cheers to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us caffeinated.
Absolutely.
Up at the Odyssey Studio. It is one of those nights, very long night. Our kids are coming off of a sickness. One of them gets asthma when he's sick, so it's just coughing all night. It's an adventurous night before bedtime as well. And a story that I'll tell you someday, Tommy, not today, but it was a wild night for me too. So I'm with you. I'm with you. Need a little caffeine myself, but you know what gets jacked up is when you do finally get home and K-State continues to be playing well and they get it done against Arizona State. We're going to dig into that game in depth, but a really, really nice road win for the Cats. They were in control most of it, and then withstood a late Arizona State run and got it done. The emotion, I think, at which you saw K-State celebrate that win is a little bit telling to how things are vibing right now in Manhattan with that basketball program. And here we go. Who knows? Something special could happen. You know, I mean, did anybody think Jerome Tang was going to make a deep NCAA tournament run the first year he was at K-State? No, it seemed unbelievable, right? Well, so would a trip back to the NCAA tournament after the way this season started. So never count them out. The team on paper is talented, and they get another win last night and continue their great play as of late. We'll get into that a little more in depth. And the Shockers, Tommy, you know, we can say Wichita State, you know, beats Charlotte again, yay, and make light of that. But the reality is they were missing a couple of key players, we found out right before tip time. So the fact that despite missing a couple of key players, they were able to go get a win in Charlotte, I do think is promising. You saw more minutes from AJ McGinnis, more minutes from Zion Pipkin because of the injuries to Harlan Beverly and Justin Hill, and they were able to get it done as well, despite a slow start. So a couple of, you got good feeling this morning for college basketball certainly for these two programs from where they were not that long ago.
Yeah, I think that as soon as everybody found out that both Justin Hill and Harlan Beverly were not going to play last night, the entire Shocker fan base, probably collectively panicked all at the same time. Yeah. Because, going into the way it's been such a struggle lately, and the last time these two teams matched up, yeah, Wichita State got a win, their only conference win up to that point, but it wasn't a comfortable win by any means. Now you're going on the road, a team that you've already beaten once, but now you got to beat them in their place, and you're missing two of your top guys, and you find out right before game time that's not going to happen. Like, things weren't trending very well when the game started, and throughout the course of especially the early part of the first half, it was kind of touch and go there for a little bit. Like, the Shockers were down at various points. At one point, I think they were down 6 or 7 early in the first half. And you're like, man, like, they're missing the firepower. And you've got a Charlotte team that they want to beat you on their home court because you beat them on yours. And then they were able to take a halftime lead. And then they were able to sort of get a little bit of breathing room. It was never a blowout by any means, but at least you were able to play from the lead as opposed to playing from behind on the road in the second half. So, all in all, in that particular game for the Shockers, down two of their top guys, yeah, I feel like that's a win that you look back on and you say, okay, it's a road conference win. They needed to have it, and they got it.
Yeah, look, throwing a parade that they beat the team, the only team below them in the conference standings in Charlotte for the second time this year, and that has been their only conference wins? We are not. But we are also not sitting here having to talk about how the sky is falling either. They've got a chance to go win a couple more games here. Winnable game on Sunday, on Super Bowl Sunday, as they like to play on Super Bowl Sunday.
They play a lot of Super Bowl Sunday games.
Yeah, it's weird. At South Florida, so back-to-back road games, that'll be tough. And then it's back home against UTSA before the big home game against Memphis. So I think Wichita State is very much a, take it one game at a time kind of a thing, and just see if they can get anything going before the conference tournament. We know they have no path outside of the conference tournament. We know that we just need to see them playing better. We also know that their best is probably good enough, just like it was last year, to have a puncher's chance in any conference game that they play. So you hang your hat on that and just hope they continue to improve and hang in there. And they did that last night, despite some relatively tough odds with those key players being out.
Well, and I think the good news, too, is that it doesn't sound like either one of those injuries are long-term things. I know that Justin Hill, they shut him down, I think, for a game earlier this season with a hamstring. And so I think, that kind of sounded like it was more precautionary than anything else. And I know Harlan Beverly hadn't cleared concussion protocol. So hopefully, those guys will be ready to go by Sunday. You've got a little bit of a break between now and then. So, hopefully by the time they play South Florida on the road, or especially when, they're back at home with the UTSA game and then the Memphis game, those guys are ready to go.
Yeah, it will. That's the game, right? That's the one we all really want to see right now is can they go get something done against Memphis? So we'll cross that bridge. I got two games to go before they get there, though, that you'd really like to see them be able to win. K-State last night, Tommy, and we'll get into this right on the other side here. That was the one where I think we're on a run here now with them, where they're like, if they're back, they were never really here, but like they're going now, like they're doing some big back-to-back road wins, Iowa State, Arizona State. Man, that's a tough ask, right? Like, that's not anything to sneeze at in the Big 12. And now you've got to come home and play back-to-back home games against Kansas and Arizona. That's going to be tough. But after that, they get some opportunities to pile up some wins before the end of the season. So that game last night was critical to having that chance, right? Because now you got to play Kansas and Arizona. You really needed that one against Arizona State, and they got it. And they got it in exciting fashion. It's just so nice to see them so bought in and energized, and all of those things that bugged us early in the year seem to be gone now. And they're ready to roll. And my goodness, why did it take so long?
Yeah, well, and you know, you could say that game to game as well, because they have a tendency to fall behind early in games. They were down 18-2 in the game last night, and Jerome Tang calls a timeout. I mean, that happened against Iowa State. That happened against Kansas. They fall from behind. They're able to storm right back. Jerome Tang times those timeouts really nicely. And then it was all Wildcats from there, and they were able to withstand a couple of runs from Arizona State. That was a good effort from them last night.
That's what we'll talk about next. Keep it here. It's all Brockton Castor on Sports Daily. We're coming right back.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
Hey, you can listen to KFH Radio for your chance at the ultimate trip to Vegas in March. Winning is easy. Just download the free Odyssey app, log in, and listen to KFH Radio. Listen each day for a minimum of 1 hour for your daily entry. It includes travel and accommodations for four to Las Vegas, plus $20,000 spending cash. Get all the info with the national contest right at KFHradio.com. You'll stay at the Circa Resort and Casino, Las Vegas's premium sports viewing destination. Visit the biggest March Hoops party at Stadium Swim. Welcome back into Sports Daily right here on KFH. We appreciate you being with us this morning. It's Jacob Albrecht. It's Tommy Castor. And we're coming off a big night of college hoops. A couple wins. Feels good. It's been a while probably since we've had both of Wichita State and K-State win the same game within a week, but they did that last night. Let's talk about K-State first, because, Tommy, we got something cooking here. K-State's got a chance. I think... Now they went 1-0. So of these last games, I said, you know, 8-2, maybe 7-3 in some tournament wins. And I think they'd be in the NCAA tournament. That's how crazy the Big 12 is as far as opportunities to play big time games. You know, K-State forever, they just didn't have any quality wins on their resume. And now they have a bunch. And if we like inverted this and turned it upside down as they now sit, you know, ninth, I think it is in the Big 12, 82 in the net. I think if we turn this upside down and it didn't happen in the order of the way it has, but you know, we looked at them and they got five Big 12 wins, including road wins at Iowa State, at Arizona State, a home win against West Virginia. Like, we'd be talking about them as a bubble team, right? It's just that it all happened in this weird order of everything was bad until the last couple of weeks. I think it's time to refocus that energy a little bit and think of this team as a bubble team, because they probably, if they're playing like this, that's where they'll be. They'll be somewhere in that bubble, and it'll really come down to the nitty gritty of like how many of these games can they take care of? We're going to really, really dissect the Texas Tech and TCU games that they should have won that they didn't. Because those would be real handy right now.
Yeah, I think on top of that too, you go back all the way to the early part of the season in the non-conference, and we didn't really know anything about this team. They didn't really play anybody until they got to that St. John's game. We didn't really know what kind of team we were really talking about. And so by the time we actually figured out a little bit about who this team actually was, they were dropping games to St. John's and to Wichita State. And then they were starting off Big 12 play in a pretty terrible way. So even going all the way back to early in the season, it wasn't that we thought they were pretty good and then they fell off. Nobody had any idea. And so the first indication that you had about this team was that they were not very good, because when they finally started to play, you know, at least some halfway decent or quality opponents, they were stumbling every time. And so they've got to reset that narrative. And they've done that, I think, over the last three or four games, a little bit, at least, to where I think people are looking at them. I don't know if people are looking at them right this second as a bona fide potential tournament team, or if they're looking at them more as they still need to string together a handful, you know, of other big wins to get to that point. But I do think they're at least getting people to take notice of them. And at this point in the season, especially after what you went through early on, I think that's really important.
Well, and we just never really saw them play well at all.
Right.
Until a couple of weeks ago. Right. Like what we're seeing, we thought, before the season ever started, on paper, like going into this season, I loved the way this team looked on paper, right? The pieces fit together. Everybody's a nice complement to each other. They've got shooters. They've got some size. They've got a point guard, which we know is important to Jerome Tate. Like, it all looked good on paper. It all would, you know, and it's like, okay, well, you know, it takes a little time to get the pieces to mesh, but it wasn't ever really that. It was more of like a buy-in, it felt like. Well, now they're bought, like, you can tell with the energy, and it was very nice last night to see that in a game where it was a little different than it had been since they've been playing really well, right? Like that it was back to like Gasan leading the way. They were still able to utilize that and win a game. They shot a bunch of threes, which they like to do. Brendan Hawson had a good night from there. Max Jones had a good night from there. Everybody else was okay. Coleman Hawkins actually took a couple of big threes, and he continues to be really versatile and good. But Gasan led the way. And there, based on early in the season, there weren't going to be a lot of games where I'd say, oh, Gasan led the way and they'll come out on top. But they did. And he made, look, you want to talk about it. That was a really, really smart play to end that game.
It absolutely was. Yeah.
Because they could have easily let him blow by and then tried to, you know, for 3 or 4 seconds, get a shot on the other end. But Gasan made sure he didn't make that shot because that kid is 17 years old and barely, and I think he's about a 50% free throw shooter. Take your chances. You know, does he tie the game? What happens here? He misses them both and you win. So a little good luck there, but a smart play that led to the good luck, and K-State gets a win. That's the kind of stuff where Gasan, like, is he the best player on that team? No, but he's got all this experience.
And he might be the most important player on the team. And there have been multiple times throughout the year that you and I have had conversations about why are they not playing through him more? I mean, he's probably their most consistent offensive player. And he doesn't get the kind of accolades in the conference or nationally that I think he deserves, but he's just kind of a steady force, you know, down low. And he showed off offensively last night at a clip that we haven't seen from him this year, but even in other games, he's been that steady force, you know, down low. Is he going to play bully ball and win against, you know, the top big men in the country? Probably not, you know, but at least last night against Arizona State, I mean, you know what, he put up 22 points or whatever. And what's interesting about that is that it's not just the offensive output. You mentioned that smart decision. It's basketball IQ. It's that experience. It's knowing in the moment what the right decision is. And I think that, you know, you have to foul in that situation, because otherwise they're going to get a breakaway dunk and Arizona State's going to win the game. And so that was a really heads up, high basketball IQ type play. And he had been doing things like that all night long. You know, he was the main catalyst for the reason that the Wildcats won. But what's crazy about it, Jacob, is that not only was it his point output, but you had a bunch of other players that, like, they stacked the stat sheet. Like, Doug McDaniel almost had a triple-double. And Coleman Hawkins almost had a triple-double. And Brendan Hawson shot the ball really well. Like, when they're rounding into form, man, they've got playmakers that are really good.
They fit together like we thought they would on paper. Yeah. I mean, it's what we thought is finally happening. I got to tell you, with Coleman Hawkins, who's taken a lot of grief and a lot of heat, and I have thought it's been very unnecessary, by the way, and I think I've been pretty front-facing with that. Fans were expecting him to be something he is not, only because he reportedly got a big NIL deal. And it's like, hang on. A, he is an insane passer, has been all year. Like, that dude can pass. He's got great court vision. He doesn't look like the kind of guy who would normally do that, but he does. He's just tall, right? But he's not a 20 point a game score like that. People thought that because he got paid a lot, he was going to come in and all of a sudden do something that he'd never done. That's not what they brought him in from Illinois to do what he does. And that's what he's doing. He's, you know, it's, which is, you mentioned a triple double. That's kind of his threat, right? But it's ton of rebounds, ton of assists, and some points, right? He's not a shooter, although he did take hit two threes last night. That's not his game, and it shouldn't be his game. They never needed it to be his game. They brought in other guys to do that. They brought in the Joneses. They brought in Doug McDaniel. They brought in Brendan Hawson. They, on paper, they never needed Coleman Hawkins to be that kind of player. Yet all the attention early when they were struggling was, why isn't Coleman Hawkins playing better? Like, is he really playing that bad? I remember he had one bad game where he missed some free throws or something. But like, he didn't even, they weren't generating any offense, but that was never going to be his role on this team.
You know why that was? It was because those guys that you just listed off, none of them were playing well. Like, Doug McDaniel wasn't asserting himself like we're seeing right now. The Joneses weren't hitting shots. Brendan Hawson has been fairly consistent all year, but even early on when they were struggling, that really, the shots weren't falling at the clip that we're seeing now, and they weren't really feeding David Gasson like they are. And so all of those pieces were not working, and so all the attention is going to your $2 million man. Like, hey, why are you not producing more when nobody is producing at that point? He's going to get the most attention because he's the one that's making the most amount of money.
It's which, again, is unfair and unhealthy, I think, to a locker room, because that's not what he was ever going to do. So now we look at this thing. The top five teams of the Big 12 right now, as it currently stands, are going to be NCAA tournament teams. No doubt about it. Unquestioned. Houston, Arizona, Texas Tech, Iowa State, Kansas are all going to be in some way, form, or fashion. It's what happens after that that gets really interesting, and that's where we'll find K-State, I think, enter the conversation late in the year. And I know it sounds crazy because they have 11 losses right now, but they're right there. They're within a game of BYU, Baylor, and West Virginia, the three teams ahead of them. They'd be in fifth place. So they get some games here. It's a really nice combination, but they've got to be able to handle business. I still contend they have to win at least one of, very likely, Kansas, Arizona, or Iowa State at home. They got to have one of those three, probably, and or win every one of the others, BYU, Utah, Arizona State, UCF, Colorado, Cincinnati, and then get a shot in the tournament. It'll be interesting, though, if they just simply handle their business and end up in a decent standing in the Big 12, their net without some of those other big wins is still not going to be super high. It would probably get up into the 50s. And that's fringy with the net. We know that. So this will be very interesting down the stretch. Now, the good news is, look, at this point, who cares, right? You're on a 4-game win streak. You're playing as well as any team in the country. And that's very real. You brought it up yesterday. There are analytics that show they're playing as well as any team in the country over the last 3 games, and I assume now 4 games, because road win at Arizona State is also very good. And you just sort of take that. Is there anybody in the world doesn't think they can beat Kansas, Arizona, or Iowa State at home?
I think Iowa State
on the road.
They could win all three of them. I mean, all three of those games are winnable games.
Sure they are. Will they? No. But they can win one of them. And I think if they can win the rest of them, which is also a very tall ask in this very good league. But the beautiful, beautiful thing on February 5th is we're having this conversation. They're giving us a resume to pick through. Man, how would this all look if they took care of business, especially in the TCU game, even in the Tech game where they had a really good opportunity? We'd be having a totally different conversation. It's crazy how tight that is, which is what makes me think we're going to have several more of those one way or the other down the stretch here. But I'm so happy that we're putting a product out there with K-State that you get excited about, right? It's not just the Sunflower Showdown. Of course, we're excited about that. Are you going to tell me you're not fired up for K-State hosting Arizona? I am fired up for that game. There wasn't that long ago, Tommy, where it was not fired up for K-State. It was like grit your teeth and be like, oh, good. What's going to happen to them tonight?
Yeah, with the Sunflower Showdown on Saturday, I was looking to see if early lines have been posted, and they haven't yet. But I was trying to like think what's that line going to be? You know, and I'm sure Kansas is going to be favored. I'm like sure
4 or 5, maybe
4 or 5. But man, like, let's say it is 4 or 5. I don't think I'm touching that. I don't think I'm touching Kansas minus whatever. Like, I don't know if it's going to be like I could see, you know, if it's a couple of possessions, Kansas State absolutely getting this game down the stretch. And, you know, they going all the way back to kind of the beginning of this turnaround for them, like you can point at a lot of different things as where it started, a lot of different times as to where this turnaround for Kansas State started. For me, it was the second half of the first edition of the Sunflower Showdown in Lawrence, because I've said it before, like, they could have very easily folded up like a cheap lawn chair and went home in that game. Like, they were down big early on the road, hostile environment, rivalry game. And, man, they took that gut punch and they hung in there. Now, it was a double-digit game for the most part, but they never let it get out of control. I think they cut the lead down to 6 at one point. And you know what? In that moment, at that time, in my mind, that was a win. That was a win for Kansas State. Like, it had been so bad for a while, getting humbled by Houston and losing to Wichita State badly. And, like, all these different things that had piled up for them. Being able to withstand what Kansas was trying to throw at you on their court and walking away with your head held high by keeping it to within 10, I felt like that was a little bit of a moral win for Kansas State. And then they've been able to make it even better moving forward. You know, I don't know if they're going to win the game on Saturday at home, but I certainly think it's going to come down to the wire.
Yeah, I do. I do too. And I remember coming out of the Kansas game, the first one, thinking, but they actually looked good.
Yeah.
There, right? It was. It
at
was
that point,
more
Coleman
about,
Hawkins,
like,
had his best game as a Wildcat.
You just like, yeah, all of it was, and I don't even know how to describe it. Honestly, I don't even know how to describe the difference between that vibe, even in a loss, and what we had seen, because they still lost the game,
right?
But it was tangible, because we both know, like, it was very clear coming into the show the next day, like, well,
they
that's
needed,
pretty impressive
they
second
needed,
half.
Yeah, they needed building blocks. They needed indications to show that, you know, they weren't dead on arrival. You know, that they weren't at a point to where you could just ignore them for the rest of the season. And I think that's a credit to Jerome Tang, because it very easily could have completely fallen off a cliff. And, you know, we could be talking about them right now, 5 or 6 games under 500, completely irrelevant this season. Your $2 million man in Coleman Hawkins, feeling like they threw that money away, all the newcomers not contributing, and they've completely done a 180 and they've gone the different direction.
Yeah, I mentioned how much I thought Coleman Hawkins deserved credit and got undue criticism. Jerome Tang didn't get undue criticism, but he got a lot of it, and so he deserves a lot of praise for the way
absolutely
they're playing now, and absolutely has this team in a position now where I mean, outside of catastrophe and this being a mirage, which I absolutely don't think it is, all of those really uncomfortable things with Jerome Tang early, to me, are in the rearview mirror and not even in the equation now, because we've seen a team buy in under him and him work his magic in that way. That thing that we all really enjoy about him, you know, the way he coaches up and talks about people and talks about behaviors and, you know, like, those kinds of things that we all like, now we can refocus on that. And now it really does just become this conversation, I think, like, is this team good enough to go on the kind of run it's going to need to go on? X's and O's on the court, we can just sort of dissect it that way, and that's going to be a lot of fun. Hopefully, all the other stuff can go to the side now.
Yeah, of course. And you know, I agree with you. I don't think that it's a mirage, what they've been doing lately. I don't think anybody is at the point, you know, ready to crown them yet. Like, they've got a long way to go, and they're going to need to go on. I mean, they're already on a 4-game winning streak. They're going to need to go on a pretty epic, you know, streak here, or at least, you know, show a lot more wins than losses in the final stretch of the conference season, and then in the conference tournament, before we can legitimately have them in the mix for a bubble team. Like, there's a long way to go. So I don't want us to get ahead of ourselves.
No.
But it does deserve a hat tip to Jerome Tang for what he's been able to do.
Just to put into perspective how difficult the kind of run they're going to need to go on, they only 3 teams right now in the Big 12 have started conference play that way. Right? So, like, what we're asking them to do is like what Tech has done through the first half of the year. It's going to be very, 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 very difficult. But we're excited about K-State basketball again, and that's all we can ask. When we come back, we'll have more Sports Daily on the other side.
The
The commercials are over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
The number 18 Butler Grizzlies on the road tonight in Great Bend facing Barton County Butler basketball on 97.5 and 1240 KFH. Just download the app, visit odyssey.com, search for KFH. If you can't listen to it in your car, we appreciate you listening to us in your car on your way to work, perhaps. A lot of K-State fans, a lot of Wichita State fans out there this morning, maybe riding a little bit higher, probably more to the K-State side of that. As we welcome you back in, Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster here. We'll have Shreya Salata in next hour to talk KU sports, mostly basketball, maybe a little time for football. We'll see as they're getting ready to go back into the booth. Schedules released, by the way, for K-State and KU football. KU football, I thought, you know, looked pretty good on the schedule. They got a decent one. K-State's probably a little bit tougher. But that's out there, too. We'll maybe get some thoughts from Shreya on that, as well as KU basketball. Tommy, the Shockers last night. We'll just dig in a little bit there. We'll talk a lot of Chiefs in the next hour. They get the win. And I don't know. I mean, they have to, right? Like, it's hard to handle it. Corey Washington, I thought, with the other guys out, I don't remember. There may have been a time or two otherwise in this season where he's taken the offensive workload like he did last night. Took 15 shots. Quincy Ballard was fantastic, which needed to happen. Look, those are your two quote-unquote bigs. Certainly Ballard, a little bit of Washington, and that's what Charlotte score. That's what they struggle with. One of the worst teams defending the paint in the country, and the Shockers attack the paint at, you know, like very, very consistently. So that part of it made a lot of sense last night, and they were able to get a win without two of their key contributors. So I don't want to gloss over it. That was a nice win for them. It was nice considering they got down, what was it, 7 or 8 early in the game, were able to settle down and then just sort of control things the rest of the way. That's honestly, Tommy, that's what they should do in the American Athletic Conference. It's not a very good league this year, and they need to be doing more of that type of thing, and they will have a lot of opportunities down the stretch. They're going to play Memphis. We know UAB is pretty good, actually. Like, they're not bad. So you've got Memphis, UAB, and North Texas left. And then you got a bunch of other games where, if you're trying to be realistic to what Wichita State should be, they should win them all. They should win them all these other games. I'll give you a pass on Memphis, North Texas, and UAB. You got to win all the other ones.
Yeah, you know, last night the outside shooting was bad per usual. Like, that's just not the strength of this team at all. They were 2 of 12 from beyond the arc, but they shot overall over 50% from the field. So they made up for it in the paint, and they made up for it with Quincy Ballard and Corey Washington for sure. I mean, 21-10 for Washington, 12-13 for Quincy Ballard. So you've got two guys that are going out there and giving you double-double efforts. That was the key. And they needed both of those guys to have effective games on both ends of the court when you've got Harlan Beverly and Justin Hill out. If you're not going to have your top backcourt, then you need to have your front court be able to be effective. And those two guys were last night in picking up the slack. I thought that it was really impactful the minutes that Zion Pipkin played. And we've seen him in limited fashion this season. And, you know, I know that Bijan Cortez got the start, but you saw Pipkin in action. I think he played around 10 minutes or so in that game. And you know, you didn't see like just this major massive drop off when he was on the court. He was able to handle himself. And I think that was really important, knowing that, you know, as you get further on into the season and beyond, to have a guy like Pipkin that can be a contributor.
Let's find out, right? I mean, that's a part of what we want to see down the stretch. Is it's really just he and Joy Igavoja, you know, as far as like what's going to be back that could develop into something. I'm with you. Like, you want to see that, and we'll see if TJ Williams can ever get out there. But at the same time, I wonder how much, I don't want to say how much pressure Paul Mills feels because it would be a very, very large amount, but I wonder how much real, like, win now versus see what young guys have sort of pressure exists. Because at the end of the day, they just got to, I mean, they're going to get to the conference tournament and do whatever it is that they do, one way or the other. It's an interesting dynamic to college basketball altogether now, really, Tommy. Like, let's look at everything big picture. The last year that the Shockers had, and then now this year, do you really think it's a safe way to roll out there a bunch of really young players next year and hope for the best? That's not the reality. Paul Mills will be in big, you know, he'll be in a lot of trouble as far as heat goes. If that's the plan, the plan will have to be to bring in a bunch of other different players in the offseason. So I don't know I don't know how much of that we're going to see. You know, we thought for a moment maybe we'd see some of it, but at the same time, like, what does that accomplish in today's college basketball? It's not like you can count on having guys for 4 years anymore. So what do you do there? I think it's an interesting dynamic that we'll watch play out over the last bit of this season.
Yeah, and we're a week removed from those comments that Paul Mills made about seeing what he's got in some of these other guys. And a week later, I mean, I remember thinking at the time, like, oh, that's bold. Like, that's an interesting comment. And I wondered how real it was. And outside of, you know, I know Pipkin got some extended minutes last night out of necessity because of injuries. We haven't really, in the couple of games that they've played since he made those comments, we haven't really seen anything change. Yeah, and so a week removed from that, I think it's pretty apparent to me, at least, that, you know, he used that as motivation. Like, it was a comment like, hey, you know, you veterans, you're not delivering the way that you need to be delivering. And so, I'm sure he's been harping on that privately for quite a while. It got to the point to where he had to say it publicly. He had to say it publicly to hopefully maybe get back to these veterans. Like, look, like, I've got to go through my press conference now to get through to you guys. I'm going to have to threaten to play other players and have people talk about it around the community. Like, he's going to be willing to make those changes. And at least from what we saw when they played North Texas close and then last night against Charlotte, you know, it makes me think that, you know, at least I'm cautiously optimistic that maybe those veterans received that message loud and clear.
And it needed to be. I haven't thought, you know, it's so funny. There have been times we were just talking K-State, where I've absolutely thought, yeah, they're not all the way bought in. Like, they're not out there giving their best effort to, and this is just to me, I haven't really felt that way about the Shockers. Like, I have never really watched them play and be like, man, they just don't care, or they're not bought in. They just didn't play well a lot, right? Or whatever they're trying to do wasn't the right thing to do. And so they weren't executing whatever it is, but it never really felt like an effort thing to me. Maybe that's just me, but I don't think it's been the case. And so, yeah, I mean, what are you going to do? Like, and that's the thing, like, Mills' job is on the line. However much heat there is this year, it will be next year. So there is a ton of pressure to start winning games. And so I now that we're a week removed, I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of different things with the roster. And I'm not sure that those would have been the best way to win games. They just need to go do what they're supposed to do. They need to execute, and they'll win a bunch of games down the stretch. Or they don't, and is will continue to be very uncomfortable. But we'll see. The Shockers play again. It's a Sunday game at South Florida. That's going to be a tough one. That'll be a tough one, but we'll have it for you over on KEYN. More on that game later in the week. Real quick, Tommy, this Luka trade, now that we're in the aftermath, and I'm seeing Kevin Durant might, you know, be shopped around, and the NBA is always insane and all these things. We're starting to get the reaction to the Luka trade, and it cracks me up that literally everybody, it's like, yeah, boy, I thought this was fake. Why did we all think it was fake? It's not that we thought it was fake because, well, two reasons. Why would the Mavericks ever trade that player? That's one reason everybody thought it was fake.
Yeah.
Then the other reason everybody thought it was fake is because the return was nothing. And like everybody, LeBron saying this, AD, Luka, like everybody's like, I'm telling you, man, like, that didn't make any sense to me either. You hear from the general managers. What do you think it's like right now? being that GM of the Mavericks? I've talked to a lot of Mavericks fans.
He's got to go into like witness protection, I think, at this point.
I'm telling you, man. Like, it's going to, like, if you're right, which it seems like there's about a 0.5% chance you are, it's going to take a long, long time for that to play out. It's going to be a rough time for that guy. It is. I've talked to Maverick fans, and I loved the Mavericks during the Dirk years and when I was younger and was a little more locked into the NBA. I'm far less so now because we pay so much attention to college basketball now. But like, it just deflates the energy. That was a team that was in the NBA finals last year. And it's just like, meh. And Mavs fans are like, well, man, I don't know now. Like, the only reason they were watching and locked in is because of Luka. You think you're going to get locked in because of Anthony Davis at this point? No.
It was a trade failure of epic proportions, I think, even now. And we don't even know like the far-reaching impacts of it.
But there's no outcome that doesn't make it a bad trade.
Let's just say that they felt like Luka was not the right fit for their long-term organizational needs. Okay, you're probably wrong about that, but let's just say that like that's an accepted thing. At least put him on the market. At least see what you can get for him. You know, don't just like give him away for a bag of beans or a bag of bones in the case of Anthony Davis. Like, I think that's what has made it so shocking for me, at least, is not even necessarily that they traded him. Like, that's a wrong move for the Mavericks, but at least like put him out there and see what you can get, because I guarantee you, like 98% of the teams in the NBA are going to give you a haul in return for getting Luka Doncic.
Yes. I was talking to around the office, the water cooler talk yesterday. That's what I thought. I said, and it's the same thing for me. Like, even if the Mavericks are 100% correct in trading Luka because he's too injury prone or he doesn't do anything, no matter what the outcome is, outside of Anthony Davis leading them to a title this year, which he will not, they will not be justified in the trade, because even if they were right, they didn't get enough for Luka.
Right.
So even if you're right about his ultimate future, you took pennies on the dollar for him. So that's the thing. The only way they're justified is if Anthony Davis leads them to a title. It's not going to happen, right? It's just not. So you lose. There's no winning scenario for the Mavericks here. There is not one.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a reason why when, like, you sell your house, like, you get a realtor and you put it on the market for people to go and, like, take a tour and make
you
an
offer. You got
the hottest
house on the market.
Yeah. Like, you don't just, like, have somebody whisper in your ear that, hey, I'll take your house and I'll, you know, take it for nothing. And you're like, okay, that sounds good to me. I won't even put it on the market.
It's not even that, right? It's like, you've got the best house, the most desirable house on the market, and you reach out to the other realtor and say,
you want to take this off
my
hands?
This, I don't care if they give me the most money. I want them to buy my house.
Yeah, I want them to buy my house.
This guy.
And if they could give me a trailer in return, that would be ideal.
Unbelievable. No offense to Anthony Davis, who's still a really good player when he's out there. Just like, come on, man. We'll come back. We'll talk a little Chiefs. We got KU Insider Shreya Slotted next hour. Stick around, Sports Daily.